Thank you again. My name is Josh Smith, as I said, and at the center, I work on occupational licensing regulation primarily. And it's a genuine pleasure to be here, actually, because in my short trip from Salt Lake to Denver today, I skyrocketed from the bottom of the measures to the top. Utah ranks 35th in the country as one of the most burdensome states for occupational licensing regulations. Colorado, on the other hand, ranks third. So it's nice to be here in a state that is a model for other states, in particular, the way that you have done regulations for low-income individuals. But just because you do well on a relative measure doesn't mean that there isn't still work to do. For example, an Institute for Justice report in 2018 estimated that Colorado loses about 57,000 jobs and about $370 million because of the occupational licensing restrictions. But that's the exciting thing about being here and talking with people who are doing the hard work to make regulations work for everyone. In particular, we share the same goals of a healthy and wealthy and safe Colorado. And the fundamental issue is that these regulations often fail to achieve that end. Consider that in Colorado, becoming a licensed EMT requires only 150 hours, compared to 1,800, 10 times that amount, to be a cosmetologist. This is emblematic of the larger problem. Licensing has become disconnected from its purpose of protecting consumers, and now is a barrier to individuals in Colorado who would like to work in certain occupations. For example, in 1950, only 4.5% of the national population was licensed. Today in Colorado, that is 18%. Nearly one in five people requires a license to work. And most importantly, those costs come with very little gain. In a review of 19 different studies, 16 found that there was no observable benefit, and in some cases, even a harm from licensing, leaving only three that found licensing improved quality and protected consumers. For example, one study of nurses' scope of practice actually showed that drawing back the regulations did not harm or hurt, but may have actually helped some health outcomes. This is not an unusual result. There are others along the same lines. For example, licensing for childcare providers actually ultimately eliminated providers in low-income areas. While boosting quality, according to the research, it denied access to low-income individuals. So the takeaway that I think that all of you should leave with is that licensing needs to make sense. It needs to be related directly to the risks associated with the occupation. For example, when the risks are catastrophic, when they are irreversible, when they are going to affect third parties, licensing makes sense. Stricter regulations make sense. High standards make sense. But in occupations where the risks are low, where people do not stand a great risk, then there are better options on the table for regulators. For example, state certification, or titling that provides protected titles for individuals, as well as private regulation. You'd be amazed at the number of occupations that are actually privately governed. By occupations, the people come together in those occupations and decide for themselves how they would like to be regulated and set their own rules, and private certifications provide a signal of quality without blocking people from the occupations they'd like to work in. In short, I think occupational licensing regulations can make more sense if they are directly related to the risks that they pose. Thank you again for having me. I have more developed written testimony, if anyone is interested, in hard copy, as well as we write regularly at the Center for Growth and Opportunity about the research in this area. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. You did a great job. And did you come here from Utah for this?
Yes.
Really?
Licensing is a big issue. It's in a lot of states.
We're all very honored that you would do that. Thank you very much. Representative Arndt, I think you've got some questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Smith, for coming. I appreciate you being concerned about this. I also share a professional concern with teacher licensure, and I did do the Cosmetology Act, and I'm not sure if your numbers were, maybe you got them somewhere else. That's not my recollection. I was reminding myself. I also heard a testimony by somebody else at a big meeting that, you know, I specifically exempted hair braiding, but I'm not going to go there. So you're right. When we do licensing for occupations, we have to be very careful. We have to keep, I was arguing for the minimum hours in the Cosmetology Act. My Republican colleague was arguing for the maximum. I said, wow, I think we need to go on record as this. But we landed in a sweet spot in the middle because, you know, as the central one of the central functions of government is to whether we like it or not, regulate and ensure that the consumer has the protections while the profession has the flexibility they need. So it is a delicate balance, and I agree that sometimes we probably get it not right. But on balance, I think in Colorado, would you say we're third? We have a pretty light touch here. And I appreciate you coming from Utah to share your perspective. But I kind of like the way we do in Colorado. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Arndt. Mr. Smith, did you wish to respond?
Third least burdensome leaves you two spots to move up. And there's also still many ways. There's still many ways that occupational licensing can open opportunities without becoming a kind of barrier. So the ways that you could draw back hour requirements, the alternative procedure, so simple registration in place of licensing, could provide the consumer protection without any of the economic costs, or at least a lot less of them.
Representative Arndt.
Sorry, Mr. Smith. Now I have just one follow-up. It's true there might be some economic upfront costs, but there's also a downside, too, if we don't regulate professions. And that's in harm to the consumer and the general population, and that certainly can happen. That's a fine line we walk here. I'm glad we're number three, but I don't aspire to be number one. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Arndt. Committee members, do we have other questions for Mr. Smith? Representative Snyder.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Smith, for being here. I wanted to ask a couple of questions. So you mentioned you had an example of nurses. When you lower the regulatory burden upon them, it actually helped. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, so
Mr. Smith.
The occupational licensing in the case of nurses involves a scope of practice, so what they're allowed to do with and without doctors. In that case, what the study looks at is what happens when you expand that scope of practice, when you draw back the regulations. And if you think about it, it makes sense that drawing back the regulations for people who are with patients more often than doctors, that would allow them to provide greater care and more effective care in many cases. And that's what the research shows to some extent. What it really shows, however, is that drawing back regulations doesn't create a negative effect. So lowering occupational licensing rules, reducing the legal requirements, does not reduce the quality or the standards of the practitioners in the field.
Follow up, Representative Snyder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as you mentioned, a preference, I believe, for having industries have a private regulatory scheme, regulate themselves, so to speak. And if one of the goals of this bill would be to make sure that regulations and regulatory schemes are not in place to protect existing businesses from market competition. How does that not accomplish that same goal just through a private organization?
In many cases,
Mr.
private...
Mr. Smith, we've got people in the audio, so we're going through the chair.
In many cases, in many occupations, private certification works perfectly well. There are some occupations where risks are higher, where licensing or other high standards may be appropriate, but private certification signals high quality to people without any kind of requirements to pay legal fees, to apply, or to end up doing hours and hours of training beyond what is necessary for the specific aspect of a field that you may want to practice in.
If I can, my specific question
Representative
was...
Representative Snyder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My specific question more was about how do you think that private regulation, for lack of a better term, does not leave itself open to circling the wagons and protecting existing businesses from new entrants into the business or into that field?
So private certification doesn't allow individuals to stay out, to prevent new entrants into an occupation. It would just say that if you are licensed, for example, by the Yoga Alliance to teach yoga, anyone can teach yoga. But if you are if you are a certified Yoga Alliance instructor, that conveys some amount of authority. It says this is a group that is all about yoga we care a lot about yoga, and this is a good yoga teacher. So there's not a circling of the wagons, as you say. There's just a difference that in the way that a practitioner may want to represent themselves to potential clients.
Representative Sandridge.
Yeah, and I can. I used to work in the auto industry, and one is ASC certification for mechanics. You can go on a Craigslist and get a cheap mechanic. That can be ASC certified. So if you choose to, that's how they somewhat self-regulate. But if you want to pay some extra money and get one that has gone through that certification, you can. But it is a private certification. So I'm just offering another example.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Smith while he's here? Thank you very much. You came a long ways. You did a great job. Congratulations. I think Representative McKean, you took a picture of him. Let's make sure that he has your contact information so we could send it to you so you can remember this occasion for the rest of your life.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's everyone who has signed up.